the thing about this short story form is it's short, right? You need to do a lot with every sentence. So I was really focused on that, which I think freed me from thinking, oh, could this be in a book? And how would it become a book? Because I think if I went that too far ahead, I would have gotten nervous or just lost that imagination possibility.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
I'm Kelly Sather, author of the debut story collection, Small in Real Life, set in Southern California, and I'm here welcoming you all to Sylvia and Me.
Kelly, thank you so much for coming here. I know you're in the middle of a book tour because your book was just published. So you are in New York City right now as we speak. And I think it's wonderful that you've taken time on this tour to stop by and say hi. And we get to learn something about you and Small in Real Life. As you said, it's it's set in Southern California, where people go to find their dream, whether it be acting or they're looking to pop out, acting, writing, making money, agent, you name it. That's those are the tales that we hear about Southern California, Hollywood, and so on, and. Small in Real Life, it's a collection of 9 different stories. But
yes,
they all have sort of the same theme, the chaos that, life, especially when you're looking for something where you don't really know what you're looking for, or, you're looking for that rainbow at the end of, the light at the end of the rainbow. But you didn't start off as a writer, so I want to go into a little bit of your background, because I think it's quite interesting. Didn't medicine have something to do with the very beginning of where you thought you might want to be?
Yes, that's a good place to start, actually. I think we'll start with maybe what was a parent fantasy for me to become a doctor. I started out in college as pre-med, which is shocking to me at this point, because I think once you get to college level classes in science, you really, I didn't have a science brain. I learned that very quickly. And so, and I was taking an English class and loving it. And that was my secret passion. And so when I exploded something during my chemistry final, it became quite obvious that this was not the place for me. And so I pivoted quickly and just started taking English classes. And so that was sort of my first turn. And I was really studying novels mainly, and some short stories like Flannery O'Connor and Eudora Welty. And then I got out of college and I actually worked for a while on studio lots as a temp. And so that was sort of my first, I was really interested in movies and how they were made and the business and all this. So I did work as a temp for a little bit before I went to law school. And then I came back to Los Angeles and worked as an entertainment lawyer, first at a firm and then at Columbia Pictures.
Okay. And you mentioned somewhere that you left Columbia Pictures and you were looking to write screenplays specifically about resilient women in scary places.
Situations. Yes. I loved the thriller genre. That was my thing, female driven thrillers. And so I actually, given that I worked in the business, that was helpful. I knew some producers and one of them had this project and I got interested in it. And the thing, so I developed this story, this screenplay, and then it sold. And then that was very exciting. And then as often happens, you write and write and you have meetings and you're doing things, but the movies don't get made. So I had that sort of experience for a while. And I loved it. I think writing screenplays is really difficult. And I think it takes a lot more planning than writing a short story, for me at least. Like when I'm writing a story, I'm sort of imagining myself into it. And when you write a screenplay, I know I've heard some writers talk about how they just sort of write and then redo it, screenwriters. But often you'll hear about a beat sheet or, you know, the act breaks. And so there's a little bit more organization to it, I think, at least, you know, when you'll see about screenwriting classes and that sort of thing. And I do think that probably helped me as a story writer. But then I reached this point where I had actually always wanted to write fiction. And so I have three children. And when my youngest son kind of made that kindergarten move and I had a little, like that inch more time, I went back to school, because I couldn't figure out how to find my writing community and really do it without debt, without like someone giving me a like deadline and, you know, handing me reading lists and things like that. And so, I went to Bennington and it was fantastic. And that's where I really started writing stories.
Okay. So we have 9 stories in, Small in Real Life. What was the inspiration for writing these stories and keeping them all in Southern California? Let's start there. Why Southern? I know you have experience and experience in the industry. Was that what kept you keeping the geography and the people in the stories in that specific area?
So it's a question that I looked back on after I had written these stories. When I was writing, I was not thinking of a book. I was thinking of getting this particular story and finding all of its dynamics. The thing about this short story form is it's short, right? You need to do a lot with every sentence. So I was really focused on that, which I think freed me from thinking, oh, could this be in a book? And how would it become a book? Because I think if I went that too far ahead, I would have gotten nervous or just lost that imagination possibility. And so Los Angeles ended up becoming this imaginative space for me that as I wrote, I generally start with like a situation or, you know, I mean, maybe because of my screenwriting past, kind of a conflict between two people and then writing into that and then seeing where it goes. And so those places kept coming back to Los Angeles, or Southern California kind of operated as this, like, as you said, this desire to pop, or that sort of need for a sense that fame is going to create some sense of belonging. And then, you know, the reality is how that plays out, isolates the characters more so than bringing them together. And then the sense of humor too, because some of the intensity, I mean, it's funny. It's funny to describe Southern California as intense because you would think, wow, the beach and, you know, the palm trees and all these things.
Oh, it used to be known as the place where New Yorkers couldn't handle the pace. And so they went to Southern California.
Okay. And I think they still believe that. I think that's true. So I will say, I will admit right now that I am soft, right? Like I'm staying in New York right now and I love it, but I don't walk fast enough. You know, like I don't have the walk and the talk on. But I mean, I love New York. And I think the aspect of Southern California that I'm talking about a little bit more is there's sort of an underlying layer of competition, at least there can be, and sense of like, am I good enough, and uncertainty. And so that's really the type of sort of the aspects that I was looking at in these stories.
And that's what you have. And it can really be exaggerated by being, you know, by associating it with Southern California, but you can take these stories any place, you know, with people always thinking there's, you know, something greener, you know, grass is greener on the other side and all these other, you know, sayings we have, and not feeling comfortable within themselves or feeling like, you know, oh, this person, they won't miss this or they won't miss that. So let's get into some of the stories. What you have, the first one you start off with is a recovering paparazzi guy who's in rehab. He's an alcoholic and he's in Malibu. Why did you pick what was your reasoning behind this particular character?
So this is actually in New York. This inspiration happened in New York. It was my daughter's birthday and we were in New York and we came out of dinner and we were walking around and there were, we passed the street kind of nondescript, but there was a gold door and there was a crowd of paparazzi gathered around it. And so there was a hotel that we were passing and we asked the doorman and they said, oh, and this was when, Meghan Markle was pregnant. And they said, oh, Meghan Markle and Serena Williams are having dinner and they're waiting for them to come out. And so my daughter and I were thought, well, I guess we'll wait too. And so we stood there waiting and I was watching. I got a chance to watch them for a really long time, all men, you know, and they wore the same kind of faded jeans and black, you know, tops. And I just watched them and I was like, wow, it's so fascinating. And also it was so tiring. Just, you know, they would like think someone was coming and they'd raise their cameras up. And so I think that that is part of what that sort of experience like caught in my mind. And then I was somewhere else where I was getting a blood test and there was a group of people. And so it was sort of unusual. And they were talking to each other. And I realized there was a someone supervising them, even though they were adults. And then I realized from their conversation that they had just gone, they were in a nearby rehab facility. And so they were, and I guess they were there to get a blood test. And so they were talking about different rehabs that they had gone to. And it was this funny thing where they were sort of competing and they were also sort of trying to befriend each other. And I was just fascinated, eavesdropping. And so this story actually started like that, but then quickly, once I found this character, the paparazzo, I really followed that strain. And when you said that these are really regular people or regular human experiences, that's really where I come from. And then I use the place or the scenario or the work. Like I think our work is really fascinating. So work is often, you know, something that I'm exploring, or just at least a place that things are happening because we all work. And so that kind of like makes the stories like a little more, it just gives them an energy and that sort of page turning feeling. And also it's a place that there's a lot of dark humor and I love to write that.
Well, actually the first story in there is about the Spaniard and the teenage girl who, as most people would have a vision of Beverly Hills and Bel Air, of money, 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 which you have in a lot of other very wealthy places in the US, and a child who just assumes that whatever they want, they should get, parents who really don't do that. Yet you have a character who comes across her mother doing something she probably shouldn't have been doing and tries to blackmail her mother into getting a car. Why that again? Your stories do not end with what happens. You leave the reader to make up their own mind to judge and fill in exactly what may or may not happen or may not have happened. So this young girl who's trying to blackmail her mom because she saw her mom with another guy, not her father, in the house, really smart. Why that one? I mean, what were you looking for as far as that story goes?
Well, I was really interested in following teenage hubris and I have been interested in a long time, ever since I read Henry James' What Maisie Knew, and this, which is about this young girl sort of watching the relationships between her parents who are divorcing at a time when most adults don't divorce, and trying to kind of understand who these new friends are that come onto the scene. And so that has always been in my mind. Like, I think it's really interesting for to sort of get that view of what's going on in the adult world from a teenager who thinks they're in the adult world and wants to play and push those buttons, but actually gets in over her head. And then you can also feel the way that her parents have sort of are kind of preoccupied with themselves. And so their gaps in being present for their kids. So that's sort of like the area that I ended up exploring, but I really just really, it started with the character and her, her determination, which really just comes from high school, right? Because yep. When you're in high school, you're just really trying to survive and have this notion of fun, and that sometimes comes from what you think your peers are doing, and maybe they're doing it, maybe they're not. So there's just like a lot of blind corners there that I like to look into. And that part you said about how the stories end, I really feel like, especially with a story, it's like, it's kind of a reverberation. It's like you see these things happen and then you feel them like wave through your own life and then wave through the character, or really wave through the characters' lives. And then they kind of wave through your life. And that wave continues. And so in that sense, there isn't a sort of resolution in a way that a novel might resolve, just because we spent so long together. Novels tend to resolve.
Well, that really is, to me, one of the more interesting parts of the stories that you have written in this collection, because they allow the reader to go, you know, there's nothing definite here. I wonder, well, and come up with their own story, which is great, because that's fun. That's really getting the imagination and getting someone to actually think about what they just read. And, you know, it's like making a movie and being able to write your own ending. That's not so bad. You also go into a couple of heavier stories. One is a home invasion, and it doesn't turn out very well. There's a death involved in it, a murder involved in it. Why would you go from, I mean, it's a mixture in this book. So now why go to that kind of dark, story?
So that's a good question. And as I said a little bit earlier, when I'm following a story, sometimes I'm just following a thread, and each sentence leads to the next sentence. And obviously that changes in rewriting. And so I made a choice about the ending. That particular story, I tried on some different endings, but it felt like it had, an incident. You know, it was a story like a burglary is something unexpected. It's, and this particular character who's narrating us through what he experiences and his relationship with his wife. That's where I landed. I mean, sometimes I can't really answer, like there wasn't an intention to end that way. I just knew, I knew his denial and his fear about what was happening, and then his conflicts with his wife. And then there's some sadness, because this is a moment where he, you know, where there's sort of this potential for them, and then it's taken in a way. And, you know, it's funny, like, that's just where this one ended. Like, it's just like this, these are where these characters are at this point where I'm meeting them. And then when I say that, there's also humor in it, because
there was, part of the story, there was quite a bit of humor actually with the interaction between the husband and wife.
Yeah. And I think also part of it is, sometimes, and that's a story that has some looking at wealth a little bit. And sometimes there is this aspect of like insulating ourselves with wealth, as if that is possible. So I was sort of looking around the corners of that as well.
Okay. I'd like to talk about one other story, in your book. And that's the one where there's three friends. One of the women is dying from Lou Gehrig's disease. And one of the three is down on her luck. You know, she has nothing. And Gia, the young woman who is dying, has, you know, she has made it in life. She's got money. Tell us the story, how you, why you decided to put in there something about the her friend who really would like Gia to say, look, take, you know, some of my handbags, you know, I'm not going to use them anymore. Doesn't do that. She instead takes them, thinking no one's ever going to notice.
Yeah, you know, also another moment that isn't premeditated. It's sort of a reaction to her struggle with just sitting with her friend's illness. You know, she sort of can't cope and can't be there. And so she creates this other, which is kind of how she is in her life. She creates distractions by taking big actions that often hurt somebody else, but she can't quite help it. And so I will say something else with these characters is that I do think the humor comes a lot from their insight on both their predicament and the people around them, because the people around them are often not that supportive, as you say, you know,
no.
and so that they see that humor and then they sort of take these big actions in response. They see that and then they have a humorous take on it and then they take these big actions in response to it. And I'm always looking for that in stories. I'm like, what could be, I mean, some of them are more subtle, but some of them are like, what could really get this person in trouble right now? Because that's part of fiction, I think, is like kind of taking it further. And so I think in this story started with me eavesdropping. And so I will say that I think part of the dynamics of guilt is actually some of me eavesdropping on other people talking about their friends and like realizing that if their friend were there, they probably wouldn't be so happy that they were being talked about in that way. And in that story, it becomes someone who's helping the friend who's ill, who seems like, who's recognized as like the more true relationship. So those are the things I was kind of playing with. Like often when I go into a story, I'm actually exploring a feeling that I've had myself and kind of threading that darkly through and seeing
where I'm at. You know, that's something that people always say, write what you know about. And always in some way, a writer will wind up weaving something. There's some little piece of themselves or a situation that they went through. There's something in there that they've seen, lived through, thought. And I just love the way you've expanded. You've taken something that might be, you know, a small incident and expanded on it in a condensed way, which, you know, if it was a novel, I again, as you said, if you were thinking about actually writing a book from beginning to end and putting the whole story in there, I think what you've done in these 9 stories gives more than had you tried to expand any one of those stories into a book, because there's so much in each one of them that you hit on.
Yeah.
And they're all different. I mean, we just talked about a variety of incidents of different people. You have grief in there, you have loneliness in there, you have greed, disillusionment. And with the world and the chaos that we're going through right now, which seems to be our new normal, these characters give us something to, you know, to see, to maybe see what we might be feeling and see where that could take us. Is there a story that you haven't written that you'd like to really get your hands on and start? Is there something else that you would like to do next?
Well, I've been in this process of finishing all the work that went into the book over this last year or so. But I did start a new project, and I surprised myself with starting a novel, which I thought I would never do. but I suddenly really wanted sort of this wide open space, and I'm going about it in a similar way that I do with stories, in that I have the sense of it. Like it's a very unusual feeling because I can feel its like contours, and I have a sense of these characters, but then sort of new characters end up coming onto the page. And I've written like, I don't know, 60 pages of a very rough draft. And so while I'm on book tour, it's really nice knowing that when I get back to Northern California, I have that waiting for me.
That's fantastic. So this is your first book tour.
Yes.
What has surprised you about it?
Well, it's not that I didn't think it was going to be fun, but it's been a lot of fun. Like it has been, my friends and other writers who have come out to the events is just really it feels really good, you know, to feel that support. And then the other aspect is, in talking about the book, I've actually understood more about it. And I really don't think I could have known that without conversations like we're having. For example, one thing I realized, someone was asking about revision, and I realized, I started this practice of going between stories. So in other words, if I was working on a story and it kind of reached a hard spot in the rewrite, I would set it aside and then I would turn to a different story. I would sort of change it up, and maybe I'd work on two or three a day when I was in that process. And I realized that even though I wasn't working on a linked collection, in some way, that sort of spatially moving that way through the stories kind of did link them in a way. Like it sort of brought some continuity to them. So that's just one example. As a writer, this all sounds very nerdy, but it's kind of exciting when you've been sitting by yourself and just working away, and then you get to talk about what you've been doing.
Fantastic. And you know, the thing you just said about continuity, there definitely is. I mean, the book just flows from story to story, and there is continuity throughout the whole book. So that's great. That's fantastic. And as I said, you're in New York right now. Where's your next stop?
So tomorrow I'm going to Brooklyn at Books Are Magic, which is a fantastic bookstore. And then next week I will be in Seattle on Thursday, the 2nd. So at Third Place Books.
Well, as you know, we're taping this, and so you will have already gone there, but I think it's fantastic, because this book, by the time we do drop this episode, you'll be up there on the charts. It's a book that I think so many people can really relate to. They are different stories, but to be repetitive, there's continuity to them. And I think that there is so much that people can go, oh, I understand that. That's great. Kelly, can you tell me, where can people find out more about you?
So my site is kellysather.com, and I'm on Instagram at KL_Sather.
Okay. And the book, as I said before, Small in Real Life, is available wherever you get your books and in independent bookstores as you're doing your book tour. Kelly, I want you to come back when you do your novel.
I would love to. This will be my inspiration. I'll say, like, I have to write it so I can come back. Yeah.
This is great. Thank you so much for taking time out on your book tour. And have a great time. Keep enjoying.
Thank you so much, Sylvia.
Thank you for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, please share it with another person you think would be interested. And if you haven't already, please subscribe.
This has been a Life of Prey production.